Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Baseball Tonight with Buster Olney. It's the number one baseball podcast for a reason. Top executives, managers, players, and the best analysis in the game. Follow along all postseason with new episodes every weekday. Be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to Baseball Tonight as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. On this episode, it's that time of week where we have a guest join us here from Yahoo Sports covering the NBA. We got my man Vinny Goodwill, the tail end of the NBA Finals. March, did you think there was any chance that we would be here now?
Not a chance. I think once everything shut down, Bo, and I think me and you were talking like every day around that time, we were like, we have no idea what's going to happen. But one thing we were pretty sure of was like, this season wasn't coming back. they was shutting down for 2 weeks. I suggested a shutdown for like 2 weeks and then a month. And I was like, wait a minute. Nah. I don't think this is happening because the things we were seeing in the streets, the things we were seeing in the government, the things we were seeing in life did not lend itself to us saying, okay, you know what? The NBA is going to do something in a bubble and get right back to life as usual.
You know, and looking back, because now it's been, you know, 6 months just about, 7 months just about, you know, since all of this started. I know exactly my last day outside, right? My last day at work was March the 11th. The last time I got on the subway was March the 13th. Like, I know all of these things, right? When that man from the Olympics said, I don't think we gonna have the Olympics, that's when I was like, oh no, man, this is real. Like the fact that he even formed his lips to say this out loud about the Olympics, like that ain't one you could just easily reschedule. Like, that's when I was like, oh, okay, we're going to be in this for a minute. Like, I was amazed how many people really thought, like, yeah, you know, shut this down for a little bit, figure it out. Then we'll be right back. Nah, we weren't going to be no right back.
No, well, here's the crazy thing. Your last day on the subway was the 13th. My last day on the subway might have been the day that the NBA shut down. I was like, oh, okay, this is how it's going to work. And they're in Salt Lake City, Utah, Oklahoma City, and I am in New York City with all these people and all these germs. Guess who's not getting on any type of subway? Me. I'm not getting on anything.
Dude, I actually know, I know the last person outside of my, like, quarantine world that I caught up with, right? Dude I used to work with. And he was explaining to me how it was that he figured he was good. You know, it was, you know, he lived his life. Like, he had this resistance to these sorts of things. Everything else, man, I Googled it like months later. That dude caught it right around that time.
No.
Yeah.
You can't play like that. Like, this thing's no joke.
Yeah, no, but I think that it is interesting that, like, the belief was that we was just going to take a pause. Like, in all these things, it was just going to be a pause. Like, I remember the conference tournaments when they were going on in college basketball, where they thought they were going to go on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Duke was the first one to be like, nah, we ain't going. And then the ACC tournament shut down. And that's right, the Big Ten. Remember that clip of Hoiberg? Hoiberg was on the bench and turned out he had the flu. He didn't even have, like, the COVID.
He looked red and orange that day. He did not look like, and I'm, someone who's covered him, and I know when he don't look right. And I was like, ooh, I hope he don't get that. Like, I wouldn't even entertain the fact that he might just had the flu or a cough or something like that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it just did not look good.
And then Brother Bad assistant that was sitting next to him with that classic clip of him just, like, Fred over there coughing, he putting on that hand sanitizer. He like, yo, it ain't about to be me.
My name is Bennett, and I ain't in it.
Yeah,
I'm
no,
I'm getting away
man.
From you and all of you.
Yeah, no, but I think a lot of people had to make a lot of sacrifices in order to make that happen. And they did. And I think they deserve all the credit in the world, and not just the players. I think the players are kind of the easiest people to point to, obviously, right? But there's a lot of people who are just like, you know, worker bees, right? 9-to-5 types, more or less, who also have had to be in there for the entirety of the time, for at least as long as their team happened to be in that bubble. And they just been there, man. You know, like, stuck around each other. And, like, the players kind of know each other. Players kind of got each other. Like, I was thinking about it. If you're just, like, an equipment manager or something like that, who you posting up with?
Other equipment managers.
Yeah, but, like, I mean, is there a camaraderie? Is there like a fraternity of equipment managers?
Kind of, sort of, because they go through the whole exchanging jerseys and stuff like that. So they kind of know, they kind of know each other a little bit through familiarity. But do they, are they out hanging and kicking it like ball players with an unlimited, you know, unlimited per diem and stuff like that? Probably not. Like, I think I heard one of your colleagues, Malika Andrews, I guess one of my colleagues too, you know, she was talking about in one of the interviews that she's been doing that, you know, she's been there for 100 days. A few people have been there that long. And like, you know, yeah, I want to get out. I want to go back to life as normal. But I feel like this Stockholm syndrome where I'm used to being here and I don't want to go back to the real world because, at least if nothing else, this is the safest place on earth. So I think it's going to be a huge adjustment period for everybody when they leave the bubble. Like, it may be restrictive. It may be, you know, annoying to have to do all these things every day. But now that you've been in it for 3 months, this is life. You don't know what life looks like outside of the bubble right now.
Yeah, no, that was actually a great point that she made. Just the idea that if nothing else, it's safe in there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, you know, I think we have learned, though, from what's going on in the bigger world, right? That just the idea that we think everybody's tested doesn't necessarily mean that everybody is okay. But they were, the protocols that they had for that bubble, though, were a different animal, right? Like, once you were in there, you were good.
I mean, you think about some of the things that, you know, like friends of mine, Chris Haynes, Mark Spears, Gary Washburn, guys like that, like they get tested every day. They wear the ring. Remember we were joking about the rings and the yes. activity rings and everything else and all that other type of stuff or whatever. So like the manual, I've seen the manual that the league put out before, you know, when they announced the return to play plan, like you had to literally cover for every single contingency. You know what I'm saying? Like, you look at the NFL and some of the issues they're having now, like the one thing the NBA did was impress upon the importance of following this to the letter. And when you're talking about NBA players, you're talking about a sliding scale of accountability for them in every single walk of life. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, LeBron operates by a different set of rules than Alex Caruso. You know what I mean? Like, when you talk about coming to practice on time, when you talk about having to get taped, all these other different things. In this situation, one is the same as 15. And this is the first time that a lot of these guys have had to deal with one is the same as 15 for the first time since they've been, like, remarkably good basketball players. We're talking about going back to AAU. There's a sliding scale of rules for different guys. So for them to have basically made it all the way through, you had probably, what, maybe a max of, what, 5 days left? Like, to me, that's the biggest victory of all, that we've had no outbreaks. There's been no issues. You know what I'm saying? So I'll give the NBA just getting through this, because I remember me and you talking about it in the beginning. We thought they would start it. We weren't sure they would finish it.
Yeah, and they got here, right? By the way, you mentioned that slide scale of accountability. Like, whether it should be this way or not, this had to be, like, the greatest inconvenience for LeBron over anybody else, right?
Yes.
Like LeBron staying in his hotel room that is absolutely beneath the standards of what LeBron James is accustomed to. And as you put it, there's only but so much special treatment that he could receive under these circumstances.
No, you think about it. I'm quite sure that the people at Disney made sure that LeBron James's room was retrofit for LeBron James, right?
Yeah.
Okay, y'all. This dude is going to be here for 3 months. We're going to knock this wall down. We're going to put this water, we're going to put this fountain in here. We're going to put this 80-inch TV in here. We're going to do all these different things to accommodate this dude. And they only make one of them. Like, I'm sure Giannis didn't get that type of room. I'm sure Kawhi Leonard didn't get that type of room. LeBron got one of one, and Disney made sure that they made things as comfortable to accommodate him as possible, because the last thing you want is LeBron on your room service saying, "Hey, man, this ain't it.
Get me up out of here." I said medium rare. Like, this look like medium rare to you? Did you see that one where it's like early in the bubble where I forget who had put it up, but it was a picture of Dame Lillard's room on the outside?
Yeah.
And there was they wound up being two pictures that were put up, and it was like, can you tell the difference? And the difference was, in the first one, it had the words presidential suite, and on the second one, they took that out. Nah, baby, we know that ain't everybody living the same under these circumstances. Somebody got to get that presidential suite.
Look, here's the thing. The question is, out of a hotel suite, right? Hotel, you got, let's say, 7 to 8 really good rooms, right? Let's just say you got 7 to 8 really good rooms. In the usual situation, a guy like CJ McCollum, number 2 on a really good team, right? On a good enough team, number 2, right? I'm supposed to get that room. Like, Dame is going to get a room for sure. I should get that room. But if you're in the same hotel as the Lakers, and it's Anthony Davis. And let's say you got a celebrity coach over there like Jason Kidd or somebody like that. Jason Kidd might get that room for CJ McCollum get that room. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, we are not all the same, even if you're an all-star and you got stripes on the wall. You got, what you going to say? Hey, man, get J. Kidd up out that room. That should be my room. And J. Kidd like, look, man, I'm in the Hall of Fame.
Yo, actually, I just had not thought about that until you said it, right? That exact situation that some of these assistants, they steal somebody out here in this game. Or like even a dude like Ty Lue, like you know I've won a championship, right?
Dude, no, not even Ty Lue. Think of Sam Cassell. I have won championships with Olajuwon, where I might have been the second best player on a championship team with Hakeem Olajuwon. You will not, and this is Sam Cassell, who is not the type to take things quietly. You will not be putting me with these room with all these regulars.
No.
You better find a way. Montrezl Harrell, I love you, but you ain't getting no better room than me.
Yeah, I would love to hear those stories about, like, the rooms, right? Like who got in their room and was like, nah, man, this one ain't going to cut it. This isn't, nah, this ain't going to be it. Like, I also imagine this, too. It's some dudes in there that have grown accustomed to what they call them, the soaking bathtub. The big old bathtub.
Yes.
And they end up like 6'9" dudes in them hotel showers.
And Bo, what are you, what, 6'4"?
Yeah.
I'm quite sure the hotel showers are not up necessarily to your standards.
No, pro ball player standards. Yeah, no, I got to duck under shower heads every now and then, depending upon what the place is and everything else. Like whoever's making the documentary or writing the super long feature, I don't want the how hard it was to be away from your family. I get that. Much respect to you. I want the little bitty annoying things. I talked to somebody a couple of days ago who was in the know. They said at one point when they had 22 teams in the bubble, they were getting 1,000 packages a day.
They basically
had to set up like a whole warehouse because guys were just ordering so much stuff. Like they're like everybody else in this pandemic, like, whoo, one time for Amazon Prime, right?
Yep.
1,000 packages a day.
And the thing is, those dudes were probably feeling like they were showing some level of restraint.
Yes.
Like, wait a minute, I'm not going to go that far and order a wine fridge. But this sports writer got a wine fridge. Man, hit me that button real quick. Amazon Prime, 2 clicks.
Yeah, why not? I think the whole thing for them on that is, I got the money, why not? Like I said, I want to know the first person who had his own mattress in it.
Oh, that probably had to be Pat Beverly. That probably had to be Pat Beverly. Because when you are from a place called Can't Go Back,
yes,
a mattress feels like too much like Can't Go Back.
No, I'm not going back to this. No, dude, downgrading on mattress. Like when you, I can't imagine downgrading on mattress for months. Like I had a situation where I kept, like, was going home to my parents' house. Now, granted, this is an extreme case, but I was going home to my parents' house. And I was just like, I can't get a good night's sleep here to save my life. I can't figure out why. And then it dawned on me. I called my parents. I was like, have y'all changed that mattress out in the room, you know, in my room at the house? And they're like, no, because they hadn't thought about it. Dog, that was 1997.
Ooh.
This didn't dawn on me until 2019.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Your back was howling.
Yeah.
I bet.
I just never felt rested. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
these cats to go downgrade, who knows what kind of mattresses they got, right? Because, you know, I've talked to you about this. Spend as much money as you can afford on a mattress. That's the moral of the story, right?
Yep.
These cats are doing that, except they can afford anything. Like, I would love to know the spaceship mattresses that these dudes have in their cribs. Like, Al Jefferson had some mattress, I think they said, that was just, like, the biggest mattress in the world. Al Jefferson on his mattress would look like if you threw, looking at the things on my desk, a stapler onto like a queen size mattress.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like The Fly.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. More or less.
Like The Fly.
Yeah. No, it's just there, right?
Yeah.
This cat's got to go like stay in the hotels and everything else, right? And I'll say this. I expected that a lot of these series would be a lot faster and quicker than they were because I thought we was going to get some real 1-2-3 Cancun classics. And I don't think we got a single 1-2-3 Cancun elimination game where it was just like, oh, these dudes ready to go.
Nope. I think if I remember correctly, even the Bucks, but when it was time to for the end for them, like they came back and won that game. You know what I'm saying? They won that game. Philly, I think, but Philly always looked like they ready to go. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like there's a difference there between Philly. Like, yeah, we get to go back to Philadelphia. Nah. Yeah, we just ready to go.
Yeah, I just can't be around these dudes no more.
I'm just done. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, like, I think the first 1-2-3 Cancun game might have been Utah-Denver game 5. And Denver was like, nah, we going to keep playing.
Yeah, I thought they was ready to be out. And then they got down 3-1 again. And I was like, okay, well, they about to be out.
And they was down 16.
Yes.
Late in the third quarter before the Clippers went choking dogs.
Yes.
Like, they went like straight choking dogs. I know we probably ain't supposed to be talking about the Clippers going choking dogs, but Bo, they went choking dogs and destroyed the playoffs for all of us.
I'd be curious to know how much different the level of enthusiasm and excitement around this really would have been if we had gotten Lakers Clippers, right? Because look, this is just a tough one. The ratings are down. Everybody's got their own cockamamie explanations for why it is. But like, me and my brother were talking about this. We were talking to our dad about this. You know, my dad is both a basketball fan and a revolutionary, right? So he ain't going to get turned off by no social messages or anything else. He just can't get into any of it. Like he said, with basketball and just sports in general, he's just not in a place where he could get into it.
You know what I think it is? We've never had to consider a world where we had to parse how we consume sports. Like everything, we never had to do a la carte. We've never had to do, okay, what does this look like without fans? What does this look like without everything that we consider to be germane to a playoff game? You don't think about fans as much, but you do think about the atmosphere of these games. And there doesn't seem like to be an atmosphere. Even some of the players that I've talked to who've talked to other players outside the bubble, they're like, man, look, the reason all these numbers is up, man, it's like high-level AAU. There's no pressure. The only pressure that you feel is like the pressure within, you know, within the four lines, which lets us further know that these dudes feel a whole lot of pressure from those screaming fans. That yeah. Home court advantage means a whole lot when they tell us, oh, you're just playing just another game. No. It ain't just another game. You know what I'm saying? Like, all these numbers are going to show us something completely different when all this is over. This is one giant outlier. And, yeah, it's probably really hard to get into. Like, you've been to a finals game before.
Yeah.
Like, that atmosphere is amazing.
Dude, keep in mind, I was there for games 6 and 7 of 2013.
Oh, that's right.
I can say nothing else in this world at this point, I have seen atmosphere, right? Like, I was there, and I was there for the, we were both there, game 2. 2019, yep. The game Obama came to.
It was one of those things where, put it like this, the floor for it to be 90 feet, right? 90 feet by 54, whatever it is, it looks small.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like when you see so many people on the floor and there's 20,000 people there, you feel like you're about to go out there and play. You're not nervous, you know, like you have to perform, but there's a sense of something in the air. And if you feel it and all you're doing is writing, observing, whatever the case may be, I can't imagine what these dudes feel like.
Right.
Especially, you know what I'm saying, that being Canada's first NBA finals and, you know what I'm saying, everything else that go along with it. Look, this thing would be a whole lot different. Like, we had our mouths watered, Bo. We had our mouths watered for that Lakers-Clippers hash.
Yep.
And we ain't getting no hash, man. We ain't getting no hash. I wanted that hash.
They did not do it. And it ain't like there was like a lack of want to, right? Because the one thing I think that the bubble has demonstrated to us, if nothing else, is just how much these dudes like actually want to win. I was curious what the intensity would be without all, for lack of a better term, the window dressing. You know, like all the other stuff that was going on, like how much that fueled what was happening. Because I talked to one of my buddies when this first started, he a LeBron hater. And he's like, I just don't understand. Like, you know, LeBron, somebody he need the fans. You should be able to do it at any time. And I was like, yo, some people play better in concert than they do in studio.
That's
he was like,
point.
Damn, you're right. You know what I'm saying? You know, but anybody who's made the argument that these dudes don't really want to win, no. You had, like, look at the way Portland kicked it, just trying to get into the playoffs at all.
Yep. I mean, think about the play-in. They had the play-in game, they had to beat Memphis. You know what I'm saying? They had to, even before that, they knew that they were up against the 8-ball. They knew everybody wanted the Pelicans in and everything else, and the Pelicans, like, nah, we straight. You know what I'm saying? Like you could see the difference between the teams that really, really wanted it plus the teams that really like playing basketball. Like, I think this shows not only do guys want it, but I think sometimes we get this thought that some of these guys don't like playing basketball. They get inundated with all this extra stuff that gets in the way of the game. And here, all you had is the game. And you seen some high-level quality. Look, Bam Adebayo screwed up 2 of his fingers going after a dunk in the final second. You know what I'm saying? In the final seconds, like some of these details almost get lost because we're in the weeds of the finals. But the fact that of all the things of how we've gotten here, these dudes like playing ball, man.
Yeah, man. And we'll get to like the actual final stuff in a second, but I'm going to ask you this. Does anybody want this series to go seven games more than Bronny? Yeah, he's going to get that house party.
Yes. He going to like, oh, dad, you're home.
Yo, like, hey, look, he know, like, that's the thing. Bron might even tell him what day he coming back, right? Like, they might shut down the bubble, whatever it is. Bronny just going to be like, boom, door fly open. There it is.
No, it's not. It's not door fly open. You're going to get Zuri. Like, she going to send him a text on the group chat. The group chat that Bronny and the other two kids is on. Dad's here. Dad's on his way. Just wanted to give you a heads up in case you want to grab a couple novels and stick it in your jeans.
Yeah, no. Let me tell you, I think Bron coming all surprises, right? Like, Bron's like, no, don't say nothing. Don't tell him nothing. I'm going to just be there. I'm going to just get there. Bron going to show up like mad late. You know what I'm saying? Like, Bron going to show up like at 2:00 in the morning knowing that he is asleep. And when he wake up, going to be right there.
No, he's not going to be asleep because he's going to be waiting. He's going to be like, Bronny's going to be like, all right. Y'all stay up. Y'all be on the lookout, right? We all in this together. And the other two gonna be like, no, you in this by yourself, but we'll look out for you. And all of a sudden, it'd be 1:45, and Bronny's gonna be like, man, I can't stay up no longer. I'ma just chill.
You know what I actually think is probably the most disappointing thing about that whole Bronny situation for LeBron? And for people who don't realize, Bronny got on Instagram one day smoking what appeared to be a marijuana blunt. This is what I bet's the most disappointing part for Bron. I remember when Bron was in high school and he did an interview and he talked about smoking weed. And he said that he had smoked weed a couple times, but then he got out there on the court and his wind was messed up. And he was like, okay, well, I guess I can't do that, you know, because it's going to mess up the basketball.
Right.
Apparently, Bronny was like, nah, basketball ain't that important to me. And I bet that's the part that disappointed LeBron more than anything else, is that Bronny out there not in as good in peak physical condition as he could be. And he getting on Instagram.
And you doing it and letting everybody see it?
Yes.
If I've taught you nothing, I've taught you discretion.
Yes. And that was not that boy's first rodeo neither.
No, absolutely. Look, he looked like, as someone who's been around pros, he looked like a pro
at that.
And here's the thing. If you're going to be a pro at it, you should not put yourself on the internet. Like, you are LeBron James Jr. And not just that, you are going to your second year of high school. This is where LeBron made his star turn. You know what I'm saying? Well, when LeBron went from just a kid in Ohio that everybody kind of knew about that played two sports to being that dude.
Yep.
Like, Bronny, this is where your genetics supposed to kick in. This is where the growth spurt supposed to happen. Don't you know that all that stuff stunts your growth?
I've told people this, though, man. I bet this time been rough on Bronny, though. Bronny at that age anyway, where everything is all up and down. Your pops has been gone. You know, they're close. You know, he's missing his dad. And I can tell you this, as somebody who lived in a house when he was 14 years old and his dad had to go work somewhere else for a couple of years, and you were just there with mom, who's missing the hell out of your dad. And so, like, she in a place, right? A human, understandable place. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she ain't at the top of her game. That's rough, man.
A lot of tension.
It's rough, you know? And you can't just be calling them to talk anytime. You know what I mean? Like, whatever it is. That's a rough go, man. That's a rough go. And it's about to be rough as hell when Bron come home.
Hey, something tells me that Bronny got pushed up against the kitchen wall a couple times.
Yes. Well, here's my question. Did LeBron see it on Instagram? Or did he see it on Instagram because Bryce sent it to him?
I don't think Bryce would snitch.
Oh, middle children, man.
I'm a middle child.
You never know.
I'm a different type of middle child. There's a gap between me and the youngest. So for a long time, it was just me and the oldest.
Okay.
It's a 12-year gap between me and the baby. So for a long time, I was the baby.
Well, yeah. Well, take it from somebody who is 12 years below the middle child. The middle child be snitching. Like you a good middle child in the gap situation.
I'm the rebel middle child. That's why people snitching on me.
Yeah, no, you a good middle child in that situation. The middle child in our situation, she tell on me to this day. To this day. I don't want nobody telling her nothing about my life. She'll mess around and tell the whole world. That ain't what I used to think. My mama was a psychic. Right? I'd be like, how in the world did you know all of these things? And then one day something happened where there was a dispute about what had gone down, right? Like, what I was being accused of did not happen.
Oh.
Yeah, like, it didn't go that way. And I was adamant that it didn't go that way. And then my mom came home, and her story was the other way. And I was like, oh, somebody out here snitching.
Oh, that I bet you the light came on all
my whole
everything.
Childhood crystallized right there. Like everything about my childhood came together in that moment.
You had no clue up until that point?
I didn't think that we was out here snitching. Like that was just really what it came down to. And I asked my mom, like, how do you know this? Well, mamas just know things, right? And she was protecting her snitch.
She was protecting Bubbles?
She was protecting Bubbles, man. And yeah, I'm just saying that to say, ain't no telling what Bryce might do. She was snitching on my brother too. Like my brother got, she got about the age gap. Like Bryce and Bronny got about the age gap that my brother and my sister got. Yeah, she's snitching on him too.
See, I would think that's Zuri. I would think Zuri out here.
No, way bottom. Honestly, Zuri can't. If Zuri snitched on Bronny for smoking weed, it would have to be by accident. Because why would she know?
Oh, no. Here's the thing. You could let your guard down around Zuri. What'd she know?
Yeah, yeah, right. But that's what I'm saying. She would snitch by accident. She would not know that that was something to snitch about. She would just be like, Bronny smells funny.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't know. Or
Zuri's clothes smell funny in the immediate aftermath. Something that a novice would not necessarily know about such things.
Yeah, no. He ain't smoking. I don't think he dumb enough to smoke around Zuri, right? But Zuri would be like, Daddy, Bronny's been setting things on fire.
What you mean on fire? What you mean on fire?
I don't know. I just smelled something burning. And I heard him say, and I just heard him go, whoo, that's fire, you know?
Go in Bronny room for a minute.
Yeah.
Go on, Bronny room for a minute. He turned into Grandpa LeBron from remember them Nike commercials where he was like five people in one. He turned to Grandpa LeBron. Go in that boy room. Go in that boy room for a second. do me a favor. Turn FaceTime on. Turn FaceTime on.
Boy, I'm gonna tell you this one time. Player haters, elevators, mess with me and you gonna die. That's the best LeBron commercial of all LeBron commercials to this day. Player haters, elevators, mess with me. And you gonna die.
I was gonna say the one with Lil Dez.
Yeah, that's good too.
I love the one with Lil Dez.
That's good too. The thing with Lil Dez is Lil Dez gave that with the dude put on the internet the Kobe Lil Dez version, which is actually better than the original.
No,
Lil Dez version.
I didn't see that.
Oh yeah. That was pretty chucklesome. You need to peep game on that one.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let me ask you this. Has Anthony Davis been the best player in the finals?
Okay, now, the short answer is yes. When you consider both ends of the floor. Like, we say basketball is playing on both ends of the floor, correct?
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case, you're talking about a guy that does not get offense ran through him, but is shooting what? His splits are ridiculous right now. Like, I believe his splits are...
It's like 60-40, something crazy like that.
60-55, and perfect from the foul line.
Oh.
Yeah, perfect from the foul line. 55 from three, 61 from the field. Take that in. There is a very good chance that when Anthony Davis has the ball, he's going to score, and he's going to score well over you. Now, granted, he's not playing against the 86 Celtics, right? Like, I take that into account. But I think this is a star turn in a way for him. We won't be able to calculate until next year. Like, this is one of those things that I think turns into, like, an MVP next season type of thing, if he's allowed to be. Because I think now, and you tell me if I'm wrong, he's played more statistically impactful basketball before, right?
Yeah.
But to do it on the NBA final stage, to play the way that you're playing on both ends of the floor, for you to say, okay, I'm taking Jimmy Butler and shutting his water off. I'm controlling the paint. I'm switching everything. And I'm hitting a three at 55%. This is something that we've never seen before. And he's doing it in the context of winning. Oh, next year he's going to be an absolute monster.
Well, what we saw is that you can depend on him for buckets in the NBA Finals, right? Which is something that we could not simply assume prior to this. You can depend on him for buckets in the NBA Finals. By the way, it was not until LeBron James went to the finals for the third time that we reached the point where you could depend on him for buckets in the NBA finals. And you could say, well, it's been a little easier for Davis because he has been like the second guy. Yeah, but even with Dwayne Wade to lean on in 2011, we reached a place where you could not depend on LeBron for buckets in the NBA finals. Now, again, totally different set of circumstances for a whole number of reasons, but it doesn't change the fact that, again, I thought he looked so shaky in that game against the Rockets, and he ain't looked shaky since.
No, he has not.
That game one against the Rockets, he looked shaky. He has not looked shaky since.
He has passed every test. Like, he has genuinely passed every test. Like, he was the guy, if you think about it. And I think me and you talked after the first game of the season when the Lakers played the Clippers. And the Clippers didn't have anybody to match up with him. And he couldn't dominate the matchup late in the game when it counted, right? Like, I forgot who he had guarding him. He might have had, like, Jamichael Green or someone 4 or 5 inches shorter, someone who's not P.J. Tucker, guarding him. And he couldn't get off. And they were sitting on that. They were sitting on that post move. They were sitting on that two dribble spin, that two moves and two counters. They were sitting on that. And all of a sudden, it was like, oh, okay, they might have found the mark. And all of a sudden, he is nowhere near the mark.
Yeah.
I'm gonna ask you this: is this, and this could be overselling it just a little bit because it depends on how LeBron ages. Is this the Magic Kareem in reverse, where it was always Magic's team? But come, what, 85, 86, 87, like, they were going to have to turn this over. You know what I'm saying? Like, for the Lakers to be their best selves, they were going to have to turn this over from a Kareem operation to a full-blown Magic operation.
Is LeBron going to do that?
That's the question, because LeBron is used to being the system. And we don't know a world in which LeBron can operate without being the system. We don't know how Anthony Davis can operate in a world where he's the system on a championship team. So, but I think that LeBron, for him to, you know, continue his quest on getting more and more championships, it would behoove him to not be the system after this season.
Yeah.
Because we are in a league full of wings, and we don't know what Kevin Durant going to come back and look like next year. We don't know what the Clippers are going to come back and look like next year. I mean, we can imagine that they'll look like the Clippers, but we can see exactly what that looks like. But I think you don't grab Anthony Davis, at least from this point. LeBron as team builder, right? Like, LeBron might be the greatest executive in modern NBA sports, right? Like, he's built 3 championship teams, you know, not necessarily by the force of his will, but the force of, like, you know, him making stuff happen. You don't get Anthony Davis in prime for Anthony Davis to be a complimentary piece, at least you shouldn't.
Right. But think about this. Kobe made it clear that he wasn't going to do that for Dwight. Right. When that time came, like, Kobe actually never wound up doing it. Right. There was never a point at which he, you know, ceded that over. And I know that people will think it sounds crazy, the idea that in 2013 that Kobe should have ceded it over. But this is even coming off the Achilles tear.
Yep.
Kobe looking at Dwight like, yo, man, you're Tyson Chandler to me.
I don't think LeBron would treat Anthony Davis that way. My concern would be that Anthony Davis wouldn't take it, that he's so deferential to LeBron in that way, that it's this big brother, little brother, you know, relationship that, to me, it seemed like it sort of sprouted out of nowhere over the past couple of years, because I never considered Anthony Davis to be part of LeBron's peer group in that way. But now that they have this relationship, does Anthony Davis feel like he can't say, this is mine now? Like, will LeBron do what Dwayne Wade did for him and say, you know what, for us to be our best selves, you have to take this over? I don't know if LeBron will be willing to do that, because he's never had to do that, especially when he's trying to set himself up to win MVP number 5 next year.
Yeah, like, I think LeBron thinks he's willing, right? And this is no shade to him, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I've been in situations with people that fit in line with this. I think he thinks he's willing, but actually doing it,
the application is tough.
It's a completely different animal, man.
Because you don't know what that looks like for him.
Yeah, and maybe it works out a little different for LeBron, because he is, like, distributing is such a big deal to him. And then it goes from there. But I can't imagine a world where the offense doesn't go through LeBron James.
See, I think, and we talked about this when LeBron first went to L.A., we were thinking he was going to play like a late career Magic. You know what I'm saying? Where he was going to operate more or less out of the post before he got Anthony Davis. He was like, okay, this is going to be the best possible matchup. He's going to play point forward and have everybody sort of, you know, move around. Kind of similar to the way that Jimmy Butler is playing right now for Miami. That's the way that we thought that LeBron was going to play when he got to L.A. And I agree with you on the point that LeBron doesn't know a world in which he's not dominating the ball or dominating the way, the terms in which the game is to be played. And I don't know if he knows how to be a secondary piece. But I think for the Lakers, who – and think about it like this, Bo. For the Lakers to have two generational players, they are not a generational team right now.
No, they are not.
You know what I'm saying? They are. You put them against the best of the Golden State Warriors teams, they get waxed. And I know you don't step in a time machine and go back 2 years or 3 years or whatever the case may be, but the fact is they are closer to 2006 Heat than 2017 Warriors. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think 2002 Lakers might be an interesting comparison to make, because I think the 2001 Lakers were just so dominant in the postseason that, like, I feel like of those three, that would go down as the legitimate great team.
That might be a top five team ever. That playoff part of it might be a top five ever.
And it's wild because they were not a great team in the regular season that year.
No.
You know, and that's even with Shaq playing like 75 games. Like, you know, he played a lot. And that was the last year I think that we got the best of Shaquille O'Neal. And that postseason is quite possibly the best Kobe Bryant that we have ever seen.
That was the best of Shaq and the best of Kobe at the same time.
Yeah.
I don't think we knew it at the time.
Right.
But it was going to be the best of both, considering where Shaq was. Shaq might have been, what, 29, I think? And Kobe might have been, what, 23? Maybe my numbers are...
No, you're right. Shaq was 29.
You're not thinking, even with the miles that Shaq had on his body, that was going to be the best of him. That might have been the best... Bo, you got to think maybe top five, top three playoff team ever.
Yeah.
They won Lakers.
And they lost one game.
By fluke.
Right.
Basically, because they had too much rest.
Look... That team was so good that we act like Allen Iverson won a championship
because
they won that one game.
That one game. That right? one game.
Like, that's how good they were.
I think the West that year, and I know we're going into the time machine, the West that year might have 650-win teams, if I remember correctly. That year they might – so they beat 54-55-win Sacramento. I can't remember who they played in the first round. They waxed them. Wax Sacramento in the second round. Kobe hit that 48-16 in game four. Then they went and just demolished the 61-win Spurs, who I think had the best record in the league that year, that had an MVP-like dunk in it and still good enough David Robinson. And then they basically just took their foot off the gas for like a half against the Sixers, and that half was good enough for them to pull off that one game.
That was it.
That's not these Lakers. Now, these Lakers can get there, but that's not these Lakers right now. They don't.
Right.
I don't think they scare anybody, depending on what happens in the offseason. This team doesn't scare anybody, which means you're going to have other teams loading up. But I think to prevent that and for you to go into full, you know what, we're going to maximize this mode, I think you got to turn this over to AD.
Right. And see, what's interesting about the 01 and 02 teams and why I separate there from the 2000 team, even though the 01 team was better, I think. The 2000 team, which you have to remember, won 67 games.
Yep.
Glenn Rice might have been a disappointment to people, but he was still Glenn Rice. Like, yep. They still had a number three player. They didn't have a number three player for the rest of that time. That was a two-headed monster in 01. That was a two-headed monster in 02. And in 03, it wasn't enough. That's why they had to go out there and they had to get those other guys, get Gary Payton, get Karl Malone, because they just didn't have enough dudes that were out there. This Lakers team this year, it's two dudes.
Literally.
It's two dudes, and you hope that you get something out of a third. You don't know who the third is going to be from night to night. We were like, yo, it's got to be Kyle Kuzma. No, it's whoever happens to show up.
I mean, I wrote about it. I said, you talk to the five most, like Gabe is a Laker fan. You ask Gabe on Tuesday, who are the three best Lakers after the main two, and you ask him on Thursday, he's got two different answers. You know what I'm saying? You can say Caldwell Pope. You can say Rondo. You can say Kuzma. You can say all these different iterations of guys, and nobody would be wrong about it. That's why I'm very curious to see how this team will be built for the next few years. You need one more guy, because the way it's set now, and the thing that happened to the Shaq and Kobe Lakers is, when Shaq could not be super extra dominant, you needed a number three. Like, he needed to be super extra dominant every single night. And that's when the injuries started piling up. That's when the miles started piling up. And while LeBron takes care of his body, LeBron is also human and going into year 18 next year. And you're wondering exactly how much accumulation that's going to hit him, along with the fact that Anthony Davis gets hurt.
Yeah.
He didn't get hurt this year, but he gets hurt.
Yeah. Like, is this a great team? Like, they've only lost four games in this postseason, right? Like, they've lost one game in each round as of now. I don't think of this as a great team. I don't think they've played against any team that I would consider to be even approaching greatness. The results are those of a great team.
If you were going to the greatest Laker teams of our lifetime, we would maybe put them as number five or number six?
All right, so let's limit it to your lifetime, right?
Okay, I'm 84 on.
84 on. Okay, are they better than 85?
That's still prime cap.
Yep. That's the end. That's the last. That's Kareem winning the Finals MVP at 38, right?
Yep.
Nah, not leaning to them being the and James Worthy in year three.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Plus Magic Johnson. Okay. This ain't 87.
Nope. 87 might have been the best of those Lakers.
Yes. This ain't 88.
Nope.
I would say they're probably better than 89, but don't forget, in 89, the Lakers didn't lose a playoff game until the finals where they got swept.
Yep.
And they were a little dinged up, as I recall, when they got there. But yep. This team ain't that team.
Nope.
I'd say they're better than 91, team that went to the finals with Magic.
Easily. Easily yeah. Better than 91.
They're better than 91. Now we skip all the way to 2000. I don't think this team's as good as 2001 or 02.
I would venture to say 02 because they should not have gotten out of that Sacramento series.
That is fair. They got a little up in hand. Don't know where it came from.
We don't have to say anything else, people. Yeah, if you know, you know.
Yeah. So how does this Lakers team compare to like the 08 through 10 run, right? The Gasol Bynum years.
Well, you talk about a number three guy. So the 09 team, Bynum is the difference, right? Because Bynum wasn't full grown until 2010.
Yeah.
So you still had prime Kobe, prime Gasol, and Bynum, who was at that point nimble and healthy.
But hold up. This current team doesn't have a Lamar Odom.
Oh, that's a great point.
Like, to me, the difference on those Lakers teams was not simply about Kobe. It was the fact that they had those three dudes, 6'10 or better, that in different ways were all bosses.
Versatile, and you could create shots from completely different spots on the floor. Whereas yes. Kobe being Kobe wasn't going to hurt you. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of times we can say, you know, Kobe being Kobe wasn't like always the best strategy. You kind of had to work around Kobe's weaknesses or work around Kobe's tendencies, as opposed to they had more ways that they could beat you. Maybe these Lakers got the big joker of big jokers. But when we talk about the next three jokers on the list, apologies to Michael Smith's underbid ass, all we got is the 09-10 Lakers, right?
Yeah.
And then after that, you taking Derek Fisher or Rajon Rondo?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and there's a discussion to be had over guys like that who operate in the margins. You know what I'm saying? Because if you got more players at the top, they're asking less of you. You know what I'm saying? You may not be a better player than Rajon Rondo, but they're asking less of you to do that. So when you put it in the context of greatest Laker teams, I don't think they register. Now, maybe next year, depending on what they do. Okay, cool. But right now, they're just the team that's going to win the championship.
Yeah, and that's wild, like, to think about and to consider. And we also, like, we got to recalibrate what we think of as great teams, right? So, and I say that, for example, I don't think the 2011 Mavericks, for example, were a great team.
See, I disagree because they start off the season like 25-1. They had some crazy run at the start of the season.
Right. I don't think they're far from it, right?
Right, right.
But I don't think of them as a great team. However, the 2014 Spurs, that did not have a single superstar quality player on the roster, they proved to be a great team. Like, they were such a machine by the time the postseason came around that I have to say, okay, nope, this looks like a great team. Do you think the 2016 Cavs counted as a great team?
Ooh.
And it's hard to say simply because we thought of them in the context of the 73-9 Warriors. Are they a great team? I mean, they beat the 73-9 Warriors, so I guess the argument would be yes.
But see, to me, and you tell me if I'm wrong, I think of those 2016 Cavs as the third best team in the NBA that year. They just happened to win a championship.
Who'd you have at second?
I had the Oklahoma City Thunder's number one.
Oh, I forgot. The ones that were up, that were up 3-1.
They had size. They had superstars. They had role players. They had everything. And that was when the league was in this spot where does big matter as much as versatile bigs matter? And Oklahoma City was right at the doorstep of, had they come along maybe 3 years earlier, they would have dominated everybody, Golden State notwithstanding. But I think Oklahoma City had the best team that year, period.
You know what this is making me think of? As you hear the people talk about, they so tired of the NBA right now because they tired of the super teams and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
These are not, I mean, I guess you can call LeBron and Anthony Davis a super team, but I don't feel like two of them counts as being a super team at this point. Like, this era of super team is greatly, greatly overstated. Like, the Nuggets, the Heat, and the Celtics were in the conference finals. Those aren't super teams.
No, they aren't super teams. The Nuggets will wind up being a team, and we've talked about this plenty of times before, the Nuggets are a team that can win a championship next year.
Yeah.
That we wind up looking at, you know, 5 years from now and saying, look at all the stars they got on this team, and we were just at the, you know, we were at the doorstep of it. I think what makes these Lakers a super team is if you have LeBron as the best player in the game and you have Anthony Davis as number four at worst. He could very well be number two,
yeah.
Right? If you got one and two, that kind of makes you a super team, right?
Yeah, I guess I would view it differently if they didn't have to trade literally 4 years worth of players
in draft
in order to get him. Like, they gave up the world in order to get him.
And what did they get back? They got back Mars, Jupiter.
Yep. it was worth it for a championship. Like, that Paul George trade. Say whatever you want about it. If they won a championship, nothing that happened after would matter. The Lakers gave up what? Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart. I feel like I'm missing like 2-3 guys.
And cost control first round draft picks.
Yep.
But here's the thing. You are of the mind, like I am of the mind, that the best player wins the trade, right?
Yeah.
You get the best player, you win the trade. Like, and when you get a generational player like Anthony Davis, like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, like, you know, Shaquille O'Neal, you know, in prime, there is no cost that is too high considering what you know what the return is going to be. So I don't trip off of that. Like, okay, you can say Paul George, you can say the Clippers – possibly overpaid, but considering the Clippers got Kawhi Leonard along with it.
Yeah, it's what had to be done.
It's exactly what had to be done. Now, let me ask you this. What do you make of them? Do you do something with Paul George? Or do you try to run that back?
I think you got to run it back.
Woo.
Here's the thing. As you said, right? Get the best player, you win the trade. Any trade with Paul George is going to be the best player.
Y'all don't think you can get a player better than Paul George? Mm-mm. In a Paul George trade.
The question also is, and I still think Paul George is really good, right?
Absolutely.
Like I think that it's going to be really easy for us to ignore that he is still a monster. But who wants Paul George right now?
Well, the problem with Paul George is not Paul George. The problem with Paul George is what's around Paul George, in my opinion. Like, you're asking him to maybe be something that he is not. You know, I'm not saying ship him to Brooklyn so he can be a number three behind, you know, Kyrie and KD, because even then, I don't think that would be, you know what I'm saying, the best possible situation for him. But I think if you put, for lack of a better term, an ass kicker with that team, mm-hmm. that way you don't ask Paul George to be this vocal leader, to be this guy to sort of fill in the gaps when things sort of go wrong, because you know Kawhi ain't going to do it. I think then if you put him on number three as far as the team hierarchy, not necessarily the team talent hierarchy, but the team hierarchy, I think he'll be fine.
So here's my thing about the Clippers and adding Kawhi Leonard. We saw Kawhi Leonard do it in San Antonio, and we saw Kawhi Leonard do it in Toronto. But what was the case in both places is there was something already built there.
There was infrastructure.
You know, he just kind of he slid in. Now, granted, like, he slid in Toronto and was the best player. Like, I don't want to act like he was some secondary figure. But they had something going already. They already got a Kyle Lowry. Like, he was just the new guy that they added to the team. That wasn't the case with the Clippers, right? Like, they were basically building that thing largely ground up, right? Kawhi, him, they had a couple people that were already there, but they were, like, building this ground up. Can you be the quiet guy, like Kawhi Leonard is, and be the best player on the team under those circumstances, right? Because they didn't have, and not that the Clippers are a dysfunctional organization, though they could be a dysfunctional team. Can you do that without something already established there if Kawhi Leonard is going to be your best player? That's what I wonder with them.
Okay, here's the thing, and there's two variables here. There's one that it was Doc Rivers, right? And Doc Rivers, when he was introduced in Philly, and I asked him, you know, over Zoom, I said, hey, well, how do you feel about conflict? And he said, conflict is good. And I think Doc operates off the thing that you're all grown men, you're all adults, handle it. I'm not going to baby you, right? But when you have someone like Kawhi Leonard needs someone else to be that structure in that order. It can't be romper room for just everybody. So you have to have a Chris Paul, a Rajon Rondo, somebody to lead and be vocal and be respected. And because Doc wasn't going to be that guy, that taskmaster, because Doc has never been that guy, you can have Paul George as your best player, but you cannot count on him. I mean, you can have Kawhi Leonard as your best player, but you cannot count on him to be your infrastructure. You know what I'm saying?
Because what we learned is people do not view Paul George that way.
Absolutely not.
They are not here to ride behind Paul George.
We are not here to listen to you pointing out somebody else's mistakes while you are shooting corner threes off the side of the backboard.
Yeah, no. We learned it's not going to be him. Now, you mentioned Doc. what you think this is going to be in Philly? I got no idea.
I think phase one is trade Ben Simmons. This is what it's got to be. This is, look, you know, like, I know we talk about hierarchy with the Lakers, we talk about hierarchy with the Clippers. Like, can someone get Ben Simmons to admit that Joel Embiid is the guy? And if Doc Rivers is not going to be the guy to tell him, hey, this is the guy that we are running everything through, this is the franchise, then he's got to go. That's how this is going to go. And once again, Doc Rivers says, hey, I like conflict, but Doc Rivers needs to lead those two young guys because they haven't been anywhere. So that's why I think this is going to be a critical, like, first season, because we think of the 76ers, we think of dysfunction, we think of a sliding scale of accountability thanks to Brett Brown. And how much blame or responsibility do you put on Ben Simmons for his game not developing, or how much accountability do you put on the 76ers for the environment that they've created around him?
I put a lot on the Sixers, and I think that this idea that Brett Brown didn't do anything to deserve to get fired after last season will have set their program back maybe some years. They needed to make that move right then. Like, look, man, they made a call. They chose Brett Brown over Jimmy Butler. That was a horrible, horrible call for them to make. Brett did not want to coach Jimmy Butler anymore. They went ahead and kept it moving. And remember what everybody tried to tell you, that Jimmy Butler was not a guy that you wanted to have on your team, right? That this is a guy that you can't win with. And then he gets down to Miami, and now all of a sudden he's winner guy. He ain't actually won anything, but he is winner guy now that he's in Miami, because we just be out here making stuff up.
Winner guy. The pendulum swung so far in the other direction. Well, Jimmy Butler couldn't win in Chicago. Jimmy Butler couldn't win in Minnesota. Jimmy Butler couldn't win in Philly. It just made all the sense in the world. And since when does a franchise choose a head coach that's not Greg Popovich or Rick Carlisle, like a top three head coach? Players League, since when does a franchise say, we're going to ride with Brett Brown? Like, how do you let those words form out of your lips and you say this and not get laughed out of a room and say, we're going to run with Brett Brown?
Who, like, what makes Brett Brown a good coach? I don't, no one's really got an answer for me on that one. No, I got nothing there, right? They rode that out, and now Doc is here, and one thing about Doc, they're going to score points.
Yep.
One way or another, they're going to figure out how to score points. Doc's team score. If nothing else, they're going to score points, and they've got one of the three, four best defensive players in the league. In fact, they might have two of the five best defensive players in the league if Simmons stays.
That's what I was going to say. You have possibly the best interior defender, right? With Rudy Gobert, you know, and Joel Embiid. And you probably have the most versatile wing defender in the league in Ben Simmons. Because Ben can guard basically 1-4.
Yep.
Right? I mean, you know, you got certain guys who can, like Jimmy and Kawhi and Marcus Smart and all those guys can get. But there's an extra level of athleticism that Ben Simmons has, you know, probably just because of youth and legs and everything else, that you should be able to do something with this roster. But if you can't do something with this roster, the thing is, look, you should have fired Brett Brown after last season. So now the clock is already ticking on this year. You don't have this year to play around with. You know what I'm saying? As Doc Rivers has shown with the Clippers, there's no grace period. You know what I'm saying? Like, this year should have been the year of grace with the Clippers, and it turned out to not be so. So you think that he's going to be sitting around while Ben Simmons is can't shoot, won't shoot 15 games into the season, when we may already have a 50-game season to begin with? You think Glenn is going to be dealing with this? First, y'all calling me out my name. I gotta be here getting called by my government name. And then I got to be sitting here with my ashy voice with no lotion watching Ben Simmons not shoot. Oh, no, he got to go. You got to go.
Yeah, I get it. Talent like that, you don't want to give up. But again, I feel like at some point you got to look around the league, man. You can do this without – now, granted, the Lakers are going to win this with, you know, two of the top five or whatever. But if that's not what you're going to have, then I don't know what the value is of, like, we got Simmons and Embiid.
And here's the other thing of it. We don't know what Brooklyn's going to look like next year. This may be the one year that Philly has a window, if they have a window, because we don't know what Miami's going to be loading up to do. Miami got to the finals with Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, and Crazy Glue. Don't let Pat Riley get to selling South Beach at the end of all this to the next crop of free agents and Miami get back going. Don't let Brooklyn get going. I can't believe I'm about to say this. Don't let Boston actually, you know, start to cash in on some of these pyramid schemes that they've been selling for the past, you know, 6 or 7 years. You know, in 3 years, we're going to be great. In 3 years, we're going to be great. Don't let them actually become great. then all of a sudden the East becomes so muddled, there's no room for the 76ers. So you don't have the time. So this year, so that's why I think in this coming year, you got to make that call. And you can't play around with these two dudes. And I'm not trading Joel Embiid.
Nah, I wouldn't. If I got to trade one, I'm trading the dude that won't shoot.
Won't shoot. Refuses to shoot.
I'd keep him if he couldn't shoot. But he refuses to shoot. That'll always be my problem, is that he just won't do it. If he couldn't, I could live with it. We could figure something out in that. Like, for example, Jimmy Butler, who is not a good three-point shooter, recognizes, but sometimes I do have to do this.
Because they're not going to guard him like you guarding Ben Simmons. And he's going to attack and go to the bucket and do different things. Like, yeah, we wish Jimmy would shoot a little bit more. We take up some of that slack space. But he's aggressive. Ben Simmons is out here not playing like that. And here's my other thing. If you're telling a team full of guys, hey, we're going to be in here. We're going to work. We're going to set this culture, this standard of working. And you got a guy that you're paying almost $200 million and he refuses to work. It takes a lot of effort to not work. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It takes that. I know that sounds like crazy to people listening. It takes a lot of effort to be a professional basketball player and refuse to shoot and refuse to work on your game.
I feel like he works on it. If for some reason, I think he's terrified of doing it in front of people.
Look, if that's the case, this ain't for you.
Well, that's the other part, right? Like, if you can't do this, this is not for you. Because I think we're at a point now, and maybe just because the NBA has so much talent now, that we have forgotten. Ben Simmons was the closest thing to hit the draft to LeBron since LeBron. Like, I remember the first time I watched Ben Simmons play at LSU, and for most of the game, I was like, yeah, I kind of don't see it. And then, like, in the last minute, he got the ball on the wing and took a dribble, and it looked like some shapeshifter shit. It looked like he just went straight through a dude. Like, it looked like he went into his chest and came out of his back. And then went to the rim. And I was like, oh, okay, my bad. I misunderstood. I understand what's going on here. But they also couldn't make the tournament. And we cut them a lot of slack for the fact that they did not make the tournament with him. But in retrospect, that is insane. Like, Johnny Jones wasn't no great coach, but that was insane.
It's damning when you consider the entire Ben Simmons picture. When you look at the fact that Ben Simmons is as great of a player as he is, and he is a great player, but has not improved in 3 years. Like, he is the same exact player that he was when he came in as a rookie. And we keep projecting and saying, well, in three, you know, player X comes into the league, right? He's 19 years old. And we say, well, when he turns 25, he's going to look like this. Sometimes we got to look at dudes as exactly being who they are. And this is exactly who Ben Simmons is. Like, not everybody turns into a Giannis. That's like this raw, just clay of athleticism and all of a sudden develops, and then boom, you got a superstar. That's rare. Ben Simmons is the exact same dude who missed his first season in the league and then came onto the scene. And he's like, oh, my God, he's going to be special. But he's the same special that he was then. He has not improved one iota.
Well, what has to worry if you're Philadelphia is the teams that have passed you in this time period, right? Like, the Bucks are what we thought the Sixers probably would wind up being, right? Like, I think it's fair to say the Bucks are a team that has passed them. Miami has now passed them. Boston, they never caught up to them. Like, there's no reason why a team with Simmons and Embiid should be the fourth best team in the East. And you could talk about cutting the process short, and there's a legitimate argument to that. Who knows what it would have been, but we can't assume it would have been anything, right? We just have to say that it was cut short. We didn't know what it was going to wind up being or doing. Because even if the process had continued, part of the process had been the coddling of Joel Embiid. Like, that had already started, and that problem was going to exist no matter what. And I got no reason to believe that Sam Hinkie knew what to do about that.
Absolutely. Look, the people part of this business was where the Sam Hinkie thing, there was no calculus for that. There was nothing for that. And there was no way for this team to develop unless your guys were going to have to start maturing and taking on personal accountability. And it seems like, to a large degree, look, Joel Embiid's weight fluctuates, right? But I think that's a function of him playing or not playing. I think he's just a dude that if he doesn't play basketball for a few days, he's going to gain weight. Sometimes that could just be a function of genetics that you can't fight, right? But we can't say Joel Embiid's game hasn't grown. We can't say that we haven't seen the evolution of it. And if you can say your second best player or first best player or 1A is refusing to get better, oh, no, I can't have that. You telling Shake Milton, stay in the gym, get better, all this other type of stuff. He looking around at Ben Simmons. Like, man, shoot, Ben Simmons, he just getting in the whip and he leaving up out of here. Why I got to shoot?
Why he don't be here?
Well, look, I shoot 36%. He don't shoot 36, nothing.
That's real talk, though.
What am I doing here? What's Formine Kirkmaz? He like, wait, what am I doing here shooting these extra shots? Why don't you get Ben Simmons in here to shoot these extra shots? Well, Ben operates on a special set of rules. You know, he's a little bit different. Well, you know what? I'm different too. I'm going home. And that's how you have an eroding team culture.
Yep. And there we are. And then you're going to have Doc. It is going to be some drama. Actually, last thing. I meant to say this about the Lakers. My buddy Lyndon made this point, and I don't know if you've even thought about this, but how has this been the most drama-free year of LeBron James' career? Like, think about this. We ain't say a word in this podcast about Frank Vogel. We ain't thought about Frank Vogel all year long. And Frank Vogel is coaching with Jason Kidd sitting next to him.
Are you trying to imply that there's a nice pad where Frank Vogel's kidney is?
I am saying this. I don't understand how Jason Kidd in his career never wore the number one. Maybe somebody else had to wear number one so we can keep an eye on it. Because Jason Kidd is always looking out for number one at every turn. I'm not saying this like it's necessarily a bad thing. I don't want this to come across as I'm judging him. But right. It is, and look, it has served him well. It has protected him in many ways. But I looked at Frank Vogel like, nah, man, ain't no way in the world I'd have that dude as my assistant.
Look, from the outside looking in, it looked like that Frank Vogel was the mark. And here's the thing. You give Jason Kidd a lot of credit for not playing up to what people believe his reputation is, because Jason Kidd is one of the smartest people in basketball.
Yes.
Usually he knows what he's talking about. So honestly, I think when you talk about drama-free for LeBron James, I think LeBron knew that this was, before this year started, that this was going to be a defining year for his career, right? Like, his second year in places has turned out to be better than the first. And I think there had to be some doubt after last season with the groin injury if his body was breaking down. And you have to start maximizing these championship windows that you got. And I think you're seeing, that's why you've seen LeBron take this thing much more serious than everybody else. And whether it's a legacy thing, and I don't get involved in the whole legacy thing, because I don't think LeBron can win a championship this year and that'll vault him over Michael Jordan or vault him over, you know, this guy, that guy, anything like that. I think he's secure wherever he's going to be on whatever your list is. But I think for himself, I think he knew that he could not be the reason that something goes wrong this year.
Yeah. But they've gotten it done, man. Again, Vogel, also, I've always thought Vogel, better coach than he ever got credit for being. Like, when they fired Jim O'Brien and they hired Vogel, they got better immediately.
They looked totally different. They looked completely different. And Vogel is a guy, and there's, you know, coaches who haven't played the game. You have to sort of walk a little bit differently. You know what I'm saying? Because you cannot kick it the same way with guys, as if guys who have played the game. And he speaks with authority. But he does not act as if, you know, he done been out there with you. So I give him all the credit in the world for walking that line. Now, Bo, I know we about to go. I feel like there's another topic that we should discuss that we've been depriving every time we jump on this here podcast.
Feel free.
You know, getting off that narcotic.
Uh-huh.
When did you get off your narcotic?
I really got off that narcotic after the quarterback got caught fighting dogs.
You are talking, for those listening, I'm a Detroit native. I got off of the Detroit Lions narcotic on July 27th, 1999. Now, Bo may not know of that date having special significance, but I'm sure
you can figure out. Oh, I know what day that was.
Yes. What day was that, Bo?
I know. Let me guess, because I think I know what that day was. You tell me if I'm wrong. That's the day Barry Sanders was like, what am I doing here?
For who? For what? And that was the day that 14-year-old Vinny said, for who? For what? And people, like, I watch the Lions. Like, I'm sure you may watch the Falcons. But I hate watched the Lions for, like, 2 or 3 years after that. I hated that they went to the playoffs the year that Barry retired, because you had to hear all the talk. Oh, they're better without him. Right? The Lions took away the only thing that mattered to me at that point, because I knew the Lions were never going to win a Super Bowl. The rushing record was our Super Bowl. Right?
Uh-huh.
Like, Bo, my greatest moment as a Lions fan was a Monday night football game in 1994 where the Lions were in throwback jerseys against the Cowboys and Barry gave the Cowboys the business. That was our Super Bowl. That was the greatest moment of my life as a Lions fan. So 5 years later, I had it.
I'm glad you were smart. You quit young. That was wise. Because, you know, you got, like, I think Jalen still be doing it.
Look, my dad, the Lions were down at halftime, and my dad still lives and dies with these clowns, right? He left the house at halftime. He was so fed up with the Lions going from being up 14 to being down 21 at the half or whatever it was, that he left the house and did not come back until after the game was over.
Hold up, your dad too old for that.
That's what I'm like. I'm looking at my dad like, at 14, I'm like, why am I signing up every Sunday to do this? For no joy, for nothing. Why am I doing this?
Hold on. How old is your dad?
My dad is 61.
The Lions have won as many playoff games in your life as they have won in his life. That is not an exaggeration.
One playoff win. January 5th, 1992.
Yep, against the Cowboys, and they didn't even have their real starter.
They didn't even have a real starter. Look, and on this game, John Madden says, at the end of this game, with the Lions won 38-6, Bo, John Madden says, you are looking at the future of the NFC, the Lions and Cowboys. You know, the next 2 years, the Cowboys went to the Super Bowl and won Super Bowl.
Yep.
The Lions went 6-10 in 1992, or 5-11, something like that.
Yes.
And then the next year after that, you know what happened, Bo? They left Sterling Sharp wide open in the back of the damn end zone in a wild card game.
Oh, the Brett Favre throw.
Sterling Sharp, wide open. By himself, nobody else there, and y'all asking me why have I gotten off that narcotic? Because at 14 years old, I got smart.
They won't even give you a team that you can like. Like, I rooted for the Braves. They went to the playoffs 15 straight years. They only won one World Series. I don't care about the World Series that they didn't win. I like the team. Like, I enjoyed really the first 10. Like, after that, you know, I just kind of checked out a little bit. But I liked the team. Like, I enjoyed what I was doing.
Wait, did you not just say that after you put up the video of Levon Hernandez's, how many strikeouts did he have?
My problem with that was not that the Braves didn't win the World Series. My problem was that was cheating. That's a different discussion, all right? Like, that's a, like, you ain't never heard me complain about that and then be like, we was gonna win the World Series. That ain't what the issue was. Now, I will admit that 96 one hurt when the Yankees came back.
That's too old. Yeah, that was too old. You won the first two in Yankee Stadium,
won the first two in Yankee Stadium, lost games 3 and 4, big lead in game 5, gave it all back, and then lost in Yankee Stadium in game 6.
Wasn't that the Andrew Jones coming out series?
That was the Andrew Jones. That was all of that, right? Like, well, the reason that hurt so bad, and this is what people don't quite get, the Braves had finally risen to, like, we run this. And the clearest example of the we run this, let me tell you something. You would obviously, you'd have no reason to think about this or remember this because you were not a Braves fan. But right. They played the Cardinals in the National League Championship Series that year. Okay? Played the Cardinals in the National League Championship Series that year. They were down 3-1, and there was never a moment that I thought they were going to lose that series. Down 3-1, right? Game 5, Braves won in St. Louis 14-0. Oh. Game 6, they won 3-1. Game 7, they won 15-0. You see what I'm saying? Like they had established that they were that squad. They had established that they were those. Can you imagine that? Right? 14-0 and 15-0. Two out of the last three games. The last three games, the Cardinals scored a run. Through three games, a run. And then you go to Yankee Stadium. And the Yankees ain't done nothing in God knows how long, right? You go to Yankee Stadium, you win those first two games. Your 19-year-old hits two home runs.
And then you don't win a game the rest of the way.
Yeah, and it was giving up a 6-run lead. Like that. But even still, like, I hate that it went that way, you know?
Right.
But I love those teams.
Right, all right.
Like, it ain't just about winning a championship. And that's just something that I think gets totally lost for so many people. Like, I kind of have a respect for some of these. Like, Indiana gets picked on in the Big Ten because they'll put a banner up for anything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I respect the fact, in a way, they put a banner up for 75, the year they went undefeated and then Scott May got hurt and they didn't win it.
Right.
Like, that still mattered. Mm-hmm. That year they won the Big Ten with Tom Crean a few years ago after they've been down for so long. I respect that they can appreciate the sentimentality of some of those teams. Kentucky in 92 with the Unforgettables, those dudes that came in. With a, you know what I mean? Like, just give them a team to love. Give them something to like. And that's what the Knicks haven't done. They just haven't given you a team to like. Like, forget about winning. Just get you a team that you can like.
Even Lions fans, the team that they liked the most was the team that, let's see, Ndamukong Suh was doing the A-Town stomp on somebody's head. This is the team that you like. And then they say, well, the refs in Dallas. You know, the refs in Dallas, they took out the flag because Jerry Jones and the referees.
They did get robbed, though.
Agreed. Look.
They did get robbed. Like, it's actually funny. Like, I told people, this tell you everything you need to know about Lions fans and how sad. Like, every time they want to bang on Caldwell, I'm like, why aren't y'all complaining about that call against Dallas?
Man, look, here's the Caldwell thing. The turn on Caldwell has been amazing. Because now he's like this patron saint. But people in Detroit wanted him gone. Like, yes. They viewed him, you know, the trope on black coaches is game management. Like, that, I swear, that is like the thing on every black coach in the NFL is game management. Don't know how to call timeouts. Don't know how to take timeouts or whatever. And you look at those Lions rosters, you're like, this Lions roster was no 11-5 roster. This roster was a 9-7 roster, and they made the playoffs. And he got what they need to get out of him. And then you go and hire this bum.
Yo, the bum. He's such a bum. And if you're going to be a bum, be a likable bum. Like, the biggest problem that I have with him is that he is an unlikable bum.
How do we get here, Bo? How do we get here?
Here's how we got here. And this is what I'm trying to explain to people. It ties into the Dwayne Haskins thing. This happens more in football than it does really anywhere else, but you'll get me on this. I say this all the time. If I want to fire somebody, I can find a reason to do so. If I want to keep somebody, I can find a reason to do so. And whether Detroit fans want to be honest about it or not, a lot of them, in their subconscious or otherwise, they were looking at Caldwell, looking for reasons why it wasn't good. You know, and they'd be like, well, it was the in-game decisions. Dude, Bill Belichick makes crazy in-game decisions all the time. Right? You know what I mean? But, like, it just all depends on how you look at it going in. And so you're going in, looking at Caldwell, getting the best results your football team has ever had. And all you can think about is what you don't like about it. Mm-hmm. And you could do this with just about anybody if you so chose. That's the thing about Haskins. There's an argument for benching Haskins. But the reason they bench Haskins is because they want to. It's not because of any of this data or anything else. It's because they want to. The reason they haven't benched Daniel Jones in New York, they don't want to. And when you don't want to, like R. Stapleton, whose work I like at NJ.com, he wrote a story about how, hey, benching Haskins doesn't mean you should bench Daniel Jones. And he is correct about that. But the real point is, if you wanted to bench Daniel Jones, you could. Dude that writes for the paper in Richmond that put a column up about Haskins. And he was saying, Haskins is like a great double-A prospect, but you don't have time to learn on the job in the NFL. You have time to learn on the job in the NFL if they want you to learn on the job in the NFL. If they want you to, then that's what it's going to be. And with Caldwell, that's just not the guy they wanted it to be. That dude should have had a 16-0 regular season. Everybody and their mama say that man can't coach.
Yep, that's the crazy thing that they had. And they put that 1-15 season on him like Peyton Manning was not gone for the year with a neck injury. Like Peyton Manning was not the engine of that. You know what I'm saying?
Have you ever heard their quote from their offensive coordinator about why they didn't give their backup quarterbacks any snaps?
No. Why? What's the quote?
This is all time. He said, because if 18 doesn't play, we're and we don't practice.
Well, here's the thing. And I believe you said this about NFL coaches in general. I think I heard you say this on your radio show. You can make a case to fire 75% of the NFL head coaches.
Any given day.
It's just you can make the case to fire Mike Tomlin if you want to.
Oh, I can do it easy. I can make a case for firing all of these dudes. Every single one of them, other than Bill Belichick.
You can make a case for firing Pete Carroll.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a long time since that Super Bowl, man.
That's the same thing about Doc Rivers. You can make the case for keeping Doc Rivers. You can make the case for keeping Doc Rivers. You know what I'm saying? You can make the for firing him. You can make the case either way for every coach. You can make the case for firing Rick Carlisle before Luka Doncic got there.
They haven't won a championship in 9 years. How many playoff series have they won since 2011? If you want to make the case, you can. It's just a matter of whether or not you want to fire him. That's it.
But that's the thing about the black coaches in the NBA. And I'm like, no. It's about want to.
Yes.
If you want to give someone a reason to give someone the job, if you want to fire Alvin Gentry, you can fire Alvin Gentry. You want to fire Doc Rivers, you can fire Doc Rivers. If you want to fire Luke Walton, you can fire Luke Walton.
Yep. And white folks got to be honest about the fact y'all be loving to fire us. Like, there's just no way around it. Y'all be waking up like, boy, I can't wait to fire one of them today.
Is like, do that make their teeth white? That they like, you know, like, what? We go. I'm a fire brother today.
But people just need to be real. Like, look at the way that people talk about like a Daniel Jones or a Josh Allen, you know, and all these guys. Mm-hmm. They'll give you time if they want to. You know what I'm saying? They'll give mm-hmm. you time if they want to. And with Haskins, they didn't want to give him the time. That's it. And that's where, like, Alvin Gentry, they didn't have to fire him, but they wanted to. You know, and there's an argument for it. That's why I really don't get caught up in that dude should not have been fired. As someone who's been fired before, it happens, baby. Right? Like, sometimes it's just the game. Sometimes it's just the breaks.
They fired Ty Lue after 4 straight Eastern Conference titles and an NBA title. 6 games into a season.
Yep. They fired David Blatt after going to the NBA Finals. And they was like 30-19 or something like
that. They 30-11. David Blatt had to go, though. He had to go.
No.
He had to go.
They go fire you if they want to. Like, yep. People got to stop acting like this was my thing with Brett Brown. Stop acting like somebody deserve a job. Nope. That's not how jobs work.
Nope.
You don't keep a job because you deserve it. You keep a job because somebody want to keep you. And in the end, they wanted to keep
it. They kept it a little bit longer than they should have.
A little longer. Past the sale date. But that is Vinny Goodwill. Check him out. Yahoo Sports. Talk about the NBA and everything else. It's always a pleasure, my man.
Always fun, man. This is fun.
All right, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing here a couple times a week. Gabe Bassani, Christina Buswell handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, guys. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.